Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you've tuned in this week. The first show of season 8. Ola will be with you weekly all the way through the end of October. Let's go to the hotline, Holly, and bring in our guest this week.
Robert Pavlis is a well-known speaker and educator with over 40 years of gardening experience. He is the author of a number of books and publishes the popular gardening blogs, GardenMist.com. And as the owner and head gardener of Aspen Grove Gardens, a 6-acre botanical garden, he grows 3,000 varieties of plants. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, we appreciate you taking time out of your day, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners.
So, what inspired you to start a Garden Myth blog?
Well, I've been gardening for many years, over 40 years. And as I learn things, I find more and more myths all the time. And gardening is not unique in this, but there's so much information out there that's wrong. It's in books, it's online, it doesn't matter where you look, but the information isn't correct. So I started writing about it.
Well, here's the question that as soon as we knew that you were going to be on this show, I wanted to ask, what is the most common garden myth that people cannot believe is a myth?
Well, the most popular one that people read on my blog is about the citronella plant. So this is a plant that's sold in nurseries and garden centers to keep mosquitoes away. And I started researching this, and the first thing I learned was that the plant they sell isn't even the citronella plant. What they're actually selling is a scented begonia or pelargonium. The citronella plant is actually a tall grass that in colder climates wouldn't overwinter. So we're selling this plant to keep mosquitoes away, but guess what? It's the wrong plant. The other thing that I found was that there's a lot of other plants that keep mosquitoes away, according to gardeners, and they're all fragrant. And it seems like we have this thought in our mind that if something is smelly, it keeps pests away, it keeps insects away. So, for instance, we plant marigolds in our vegetable gardens to keep insects out. And the reason is they're smelly plants. Well, it turns out that North America, at least, there is nothing you can plant in your garden that will keep mosquitoes away. Doesn't matter how it smells.
Well, I find, you know, we have a large social media presence, and when people post things about what I know and what you've proven to be incorrect, I'll grab that link from your site, put it on the underneath their comment, and they don't like it because they are right.
Yeah, I know. Not everybody likes me. The problem is that humans are wired naturally to develop beliefs. And once we believe something, it takes a lot of information to get us to change that belief. All right? And we're all like that. We're just wired that way. So if you tell me I'm wrong about something I've been doing for years, I just simply won't believe you. I tell people, I say, look, this is what the science says. You can go read the science. Doesn't matter. People won't believe it. The one thing I do try to tell people is look, in gardening, a lot of people have opinions because they've experienced something. But in order for you to actually know that it works, you have to do controls. You have to have, like, two plants. And you treat one way and the second a different way, and then you compare the two. And you have to measure something. This is the standard scientific process. Gardeners don't do that. In 20 years of doing this, I rarely found a gardener who comes along and says, well, you know what? I actually ran controls, and this is how I set them up. Virtually never happens. What we tend to do is we do one thing, we don't measure anything, we get this sixth sense feeling, and we say, okay, my tomatoes this year were larger than last year, and you know, I put Tums in the ground this year, so it must have been the Tums. That doesn't work, and it's very hard to convince someone that they're wrong once they have that belief.
that definitely makes a lot of sense. You know, we are all wired very much the same. So, speaking of this, where do you get most of your research from? It sounds like you kind of do some experimentation, but where else do you get it from?
Yeah, well, I could never test all this stuff. So what I do is I generally get online and I search for sites from government, so universities and so on, get their information. And then I take it one step further and I use something called Google Scholar, which is a form of Google that looks at research papers. And then I go and actually look at the research that's been done and try and find it. Now, I can't always find it for gardening information, but a lot of times we can, right? So there's a lot of research done in agriculture, for instance, that we can apply to gardening, right? So that's what I do. So if you read my blog, you'll see that I say things, and I always include links to research studies. And it doesn't mean that the research studies are 100% correct all the time. Things change in science, but at least we have a good probability that the information is correct. Right.
Well, what is something that you thought was a garden myth, and then doing all that research and that due diligence, you were proven wrong?
Well, the one that's kind of interesting is that for years, people always said that, you know, at the end of the season, they go out in their gardens and they collect their green tomatoes and they bring them in the house and they either put them in paper bags or in boxes or they just leave them on the table. There's various ways of doing this, and they ripen. And I just never really believed that because I knew you had to let the tomatoes ripen on the vine, right? They need the sun. They need the plant for sending nutrients into that tomato. It needs to ripen on the vine. Well, I started looking into this, and it turns out that's completely wrong. And the science is pretty clear on this. It's been tested numerous times. It turns out that as the tomato, which is actually a fruit, right? It's not a vegetable.
Right,
it's a fruit
right.
because it's coming from the flower. As that fruit ripens, it goes through a green stage. And if you take it at that point off the plant, it won't ripen. But once it reaches a point that's called the breaker stage, it has a little bit of blush on it. So it's not quite so green anymore. You can see a little pink on it. It's the breaker stage. If you take it off the plant at that point and bring it in the house, it will ripen the same way as it will on the vine. And the reason is that as far as the tomato plant's concerned, once it's reached breaker stage, it's fully ripe. Remember, plants and people have different opinions on these things. So a plant says this fruit is finished when the seeds are developed. And in fact, you can take that breaker stage green tomato and take the seeds out and they'll germinate just fine because as far as the plant's concerned, this whole process is finished. Humans, on the other hand, we don't think those are finished. We need them nice and ripe and juicy and red.
Right.
And so we wait for that to happen, but that's actually happening after the plant is finished with the fruit, right? So, in fact, and I've tested this now for several years with blind studies with friends and so on. If you bring them in the house at that point, they ripen just fine. They're just as tasty. And, in fact, they're better in some ways because a lot of the pests that go on these tomatoes, particularly things like birds that chew little holes in them, they wait, too, until it gets red. So now you're harvesting these better quality tomatoes, bringing them in, and the birds can't get at them because they're in your kitchen.
Well, and yeah, that's the thing, that you can actually enjoy it without having to either sticky fingers or animals. And I think tomatoes, and you know, we've covered this topic on the program, what do you put in the hole at the time of planting a tomato? And there is everything in the world, and you've probably seen this, from Tums to crushed eggshells to everything in between that should not even be allowed in the garden. And it's just amazing that these people continue to do such because, oh, I've always done this. Grandma's always done this. She always had a wonderful garden, that type of mindset.
That's right, yeah. And I understand it. I understand why people are like that. But I always encourage people is let's stop and look at the science. What does the science actually say, right? So the Tums case, you actually have to put 80 tums in every planting hole to give the plant enough calcium.
That's right? A lot.
Assuming that you have low calcium.
Well, that's assuming you have low calcium, which most soil in North America does not have.
Right.
So in high calcium soil, the tums do absolutely nothing. Yeah.
So,
in fact, people do that because it's they're trying to stop blossom end rot. And
right.
Blossom end rot actually has nothing to do with calcium, really. It's a watering issue.
Correct.
So as long as you water your plants correctly, you won't have blossom end rot.
I was actually going to just ask you about that because I feel like that's the biggest gardening myth, and people are adding, what's it called, Epsom salt.
Powdered milk,
et cetera. So can you just repeat some of the science behind that? Because I know Joey and I talk about it all the time, but I think it would be helpful for our listeners to hear it from somebody like you.
Sure. So blossom end rot is when the end of the tomato goes black. It's kind of a corky material. It gets hard. And it just doesn't make for good eating. And we used to think that was a calcium deficiency, and it is a calcium deficiency in the fruit, but it's not necessarily a calcium deficiency in the soil. So if your soil is low in calcium, adding calcium to the soil will help. But as I said, most soil in North America is not low in calcium, and so adding things won't help. This is actually a watering issue. If you keep the plant well watered and it doesn't go through these cycles of wet, dry, we want even watering, then the plant takes more of the water and sends it to the fruit, and along with that water goes the calcium. So you solve the calcium problem in the fruit by watering correctly. And this has now been studied for a number of years, and we're very certain about this. This isn't science that we're still thinking about. This is well known. Unfortunately, gardeners don't know that. And there's all these home remedies to solve the problem. It's a watering issue. And that's why a lot of times you'll see this early in the year with sort of the first tomato on the plant, because at that time the plant has a very small root system, and it has trouble getting water. As the summer goes along, you see the problem going away. Well, the reason is the plant now has a larger root system and it's able to get its own water. And this is another reason why a lot of people believe these myths, because in the spring they've done something to the soil and solved the problem. Well, the way they solved the problem is that the plant got a bigger root system and took care of it on its own. But whatever you did in spring, you're going to believe worked. And so you're going to do it next year and the year after, and you're going to go online and tell all your friends that this is the way to do it.
Well, Robert, we greatly appreciate the time that you've given us here. How can people find your website, your blog, and the books that you have written?
All right. So the best place to start is on my blog called gardenmyths.com. And there are almost 700 posts there covering all kinds of things, all to do with gardening. The other way to find me is with the handle Garden Fundamentals. I have both a Facebook group that people are welcome to join, and I'm on there all the time answering your questions. And I have a YouTube channel called Garden Fundamentals. And in fact, this weekend, we just hit 10 million views. And in the next half hour or so, we'll reach 100,000 subscribers.
Very good.
So we can celebrate on your show here. I'm four people short of 100,000 subscribers. So everyone jump on YouTube and subscribe.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, we greatly appreciate not only you being on the show, but the effort and the dedication that you've put forth, not to debunk what people assumed was the right thing to do, whether they acknowledged it was wrong or they didn't know it was wrong, and you've told them, do it this way, save time, save money, and have a great garden. We thank you for that.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.